following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Have you ever tried to do what you know you've been called to do and you run into an obstacle? You've been there? Maybe it was a physical barrier. Maybe it was a financial barrier. Maybe it was an emotional barrier. I don't know about you, but it seems like God seldom gives me easy jobs. He usually tends to throw me in the deep end without floaties. And maybe you know what that's like, right? You feel so small compared to the situation. You feel like you don't have the strength. You feel that fear begin to creep in and to paralyze you. Anybody else besides me ever been there? Okay, one or two of you. Okay, fair enough. Whatever that barrier is, let me remind you that we serve a God who specializes in removing barriers. We serve a God who moves mountains, who parts seas, who tears down walls. And I've said this many times before, it's especially in the context of this series, it's not something that's original with me. I forget where I picked it up, but I think it's true. If God has brought you to it, He will see you through it. About 3,500 years ago, the people of Israel were seeking to fulfill the task that God had given them. And they encountered a major obstacle. We read about it in Joshua chapter 6. God had instructed them to march into the land of Canaan and conquer it. Now, you may remember a generation before, they had sent spies into the land who told them, hey, it's a good land, but there's some obstacles. There are these great fortified cities filled with these large, capable warriors. Now, just 10 miles after crossing into this land to begin this process of conquering it, the Israelites found themselves face to face with one of those fortified cities. At this time, Jericho was one of the oldest cities in human history. It sat along one of the main trade routes entering into Canaan. And it was surrounded by high walls. And at this point, because they'd heard about the Israelites, it was shut up tight. Now, the Israelites could have just marched around it, but only a fool would leave such a powerful threat in your rearview mirror. Jericho had to be dealt with. The question was how. Thankfully, the Israelites served a God who specializes in removing barriers. This morning, we're going to begin to see how that story played out. And we're going to look at the lessons that we can learn from their situation as we struggle with strongholds in our own lives. I say begin to because originally this was going to be one message. I had everything planned out and outlined out to that end. And in fact, when I left the office Thursday, that was still the plan. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but over the last few days, the Lord's made it pretty obvious by some of the obstacles He's put in my life that we needed to focus on one particular point today and nail that down. And Lord willing, we'll come back and deal with points 2 through 5 next week. So this is going to be a two-parter. But apparently somebody needs to hear what I'm getting ready to share with you. I don't know who, I don't know what your situation is. Maybe it's you that needs to hear this because it's a point that can very easily get overlooked in this broader story of how God brought the walls down in Jericho. But it's really a major point because if you don't get past this, none of the rest of it really matters. And the first point is this, rejecting God is a serious matter. Rejecting God is a serious matter. If you'll look with me in Joshua chapter 6, verse 1. Now Jericho was tightly shut because of the sons of Israel. No one went out and no one came in. Stop there just for a second. When the defenders of Jericho learned that the Israelite forces were approaching, they locked the city down, they shut the gates tight. Now, it's important for us to realize that the scribes who recorded this battle, when they wrote down that Jericho was tightly shut, it wasn't just shut up against the Israelites. It was also shut up against Israel's God. How do we know that? Because earlier in Joshua chapter 2, some of you may remember, we talked about how Joshua sent spies into the city of Jericho to conduct a reconnaissance mission. And if you missed that message, let me encourage you to go back and listen to it. It's on our website under the media tab. Joshua chapter 2, Choose the Right Side, I think is the title of that. But these spies slipped in and they made contact with the proprietor of a rather shady inn located near the walls of the city, which was run by a prostitute named Rahab. And Rahab told these spies that the whole city was terrified of the approaching Israelites, because everybody had heard how Israel's God had parted the Red Sea to allow the Israelites to escape the Egyptians. Everybody had heard how the Israelites had already defeated two armies that had tried to prevent them from even getting close to Canaan. And all these stories are floating around, and the people were terrified. And Rahab, because of that, decided to throw her lot in with Israel's God and help the spies. This woman with a shady past who grew up a pagan recognized Israel's God as the one true God. And if you go back and look in Joshua chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, she actually refers to him by his name, the name that he gave Moses at the burning bush. It's a name we really aren't sure how to pronounce. Closest we can come to is the name Yahweh. You'll hear that a lot. And that is when Moses said, God, who shall I tell is sending me? Who shall I tell Pharaoh is sending me? And he says, you tell him, I am. And that's the derivative of that name. And so she refers to that God of the Israelites by that name. And she calls him, in Joshua 2, verse 11, God of heaven above and earth below. In other words, she is saying, I believe your God is the real deal. He's the one true God, and I've seen what he's done through you, so I am casting my lot with you guys and with that God. Unfortunately for them, Rahab's neighbors did not share her newfound faith. And when they heard the stories about Israel's God, instead of turning to him in faith as she did, they rejected him in fear. They shut up their city tight. And that rejection sealed their fate. And I really believe, based on what happens to Rahab, if this city, instead of shutting up tight, had thrown its gates open and welcomed the Israelites in and decided to join with their cause, their story would have turned out very differently. And here's the thing we can learn from this, okay? The more tightly we shut our hearts up against God, the more likely he is to give us what we want. And that's not necessarily a good thing. You want to live life as if God doesn't exist? Don't be surprised if eventually he pulls back and says, okay, but trust me, it's not what you're expecting. See, a lot of people try to hold God at arm's length, okay? You know, they're okay having a little bit of God that they can carry around in their pocket or wear around their neck or slap on the back of their car as a bumper sticker. But they don't want God to actually be God over their lives. So they hold them at arm's length. Or some people try to hide behind the question, you know, how can a loving God send people to hell? Now, people who ask that question fundamentally misunderstand the situation. Because the reality is, God does love us. And get this, God never sent anyone to hell. Okay? Pastor, what kind of heresy are you teaching today? No, I'm just telling you the truth. Now, people are destined for hell. There is a real place called hell, and people are destined there. God doesn't send people there. At least not according to the Bible. The message of the Bible is there really is a hell, and that without an intervention from God, every human being's already on the road to that destination. Now, let me just say at this point here, this is not the kind of message I like to bring, okay? I like to bring positive, uplifting messages, okay, that help people feel good and ready to go out and walk in faith. But sometimes we got to deal with this reality. And I also realize there are some guys you may hear that that's all they talk about. It seems like they're looking forward to people going to hell. And if you hear somebody like that, you need to run. Because God has called us to share life. We don't need to have any joy of the prospect of somebody missing out on the life God offers us. It should break our hearts and cause us to weep over the prospect that anyone could miss out on that gift of life. But it's a reality we have to deal with. Now, contrary to popular belief, the Bible doesn't mention hell on every other page. Though in a few places it is mentioned, it is described as a very real place. And the Bible uses some rather vivid imagery to describe this place. None of it good. Okay? It's described in Jude 1:6 as a prison. It's described in several places as a dark and shadowy place. It's described as a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. Not the kind of place you want to be. Jesus, one of his favorite descriptions, he compared it to Gehenna, which was the smoldering garbage dump right outside the city of Jerusalem. In Matthew 3:12, it's described as a place of unquenchable fire. Now, this is not a message about hell. It's a message about not rejecting God. So let's just stipulate for our purposes this morning that hell represents a state of existence where our souls exist with an eternal sense of God's absence. And since our souls were created to draw life from God, I don't know about you, that sounds to me like a fate worse than death. Imagine the agony that would exist when the one thing that would satisfy that hole in your being seems forever blocked from you. I have this condition, it's kind of a nuisance, where every now and then I get these spasms in my windpipe, okay? It almost feels like you're choking, okay? And especially if you panic. I've learned that if I feel that coming on, if something triggers that, I just need to relax and let everything, there's one or two other people in here I know that have the same problem. Just kind of relax and let it open back up. But if that ever happens, it's scary. Because you know what? Your lungs are made for one thing, air, right? And if all of a sudden you feel like you can't get that air in, those lungs start to scream, right? Hey, wait a minute. We need that air. Let the air in, you know? Well, your souls are designed very similarly for one thing, for God. And imagine being cut off from the one thing you were designed for eternity. And what that would be like. The Bible is also very clear that ever since the first human beings turned their hearts against God, every other human being comes into this world hardwired to reject God. You don't believe me? Look at our world. Just pick up a newspaper. They still print those, right? Log on the internet. Go to YouTube. Look at the state our world is in. Psalm 14, verses 2 through 3 tell us, "The Lord has looked down from heaven upon the sons of mankind to see if there are any who understand, who seek God. They have all turned aside. Together they are corrupt. There's no one who does good. No, not even one." Now, some people may be better than others, but you scratch too far beneath the surface on any of us, you're going to find a little selfishness, aren't you? A little self-centeredness. Romans 3:23 tells us, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." And Romans 6:23 tells us, "The wages of sin is death." And when Paul writes about that death, he's not talking about, when your heart stops beating. He's talking about spiritual death, about the kind of death that really matters, eternal death. Sometimes we reject God outright and try to set ourselves up in his place. That was the original sin. It wasn't eating an apple, which I don't know where apples came in because they're not even mentioned in Genesis chapter 3. It says the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What that means is human beings decided to seize for themselves the ability to decide what's good and what's evil. How many times have we tried to abrogate that or claim that power for ourselves? We're claiming a power that belongs rightfully only to God. We try to set ourselves up in his place. Sometimes we create little false gods for ourselves, okay? And the funny thing is these false gods just happen to approve all the same things we approve of, don't they? Funny how that works. These false gods always affirm us and they never challenge us. Sometimes we create a false god by creating a false image of the one true God. It's an image that's shaped more by our personal preference than by the reality of his character. If you ever catch yourself saying, "Well, my God would never," back up. Because there's a good chance you may be following a false god if it's a god you've shaped in your image. Sometimes we don't recognize false gods as gods, but simply give ungodly things a godlike power over our lives by trying to take our security and our significance from those things. Things like power and possessions and popularity and pleasure, and the list goes on. Anything that's less than God that we try to put in the place of God in our lives is a false god. And here's the thing, false gods may soothe your conscience, but they can never save your soul. The Bible teaches that God does desire to save everyone, but in the end, he will respect our wishes. 2 Peter 3, verse 9, you've heard me reference this passage a lot of times if you've been around here for any length of time. The Lord is not slow about his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient towards you, not willing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. That's what God wants. He would want all of us to throw open the gates of our lives and invite him in. But God realizes not everybody's going to do that. That's why Paul writes in Romans 1, verses 28 to 32, "And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a depraved mind, to do those things which are not proper. People having been filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, and evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unfeeling, and unmerciful. And although they knew the ordinance of God, and that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." Paul describing there what happens when we get on this trajectory of wanting to decide right and wrong for ourselves and turning our back against God, trying to set ourselves up in God's place. As long as we stay on that road leads one place, death. See, the people of Jericho had heard the truth about God. They had heard how he had freed the Israelites from slavery in Egypt, how he had parted the Red Sea, how that sea had swallowed up Pharaoh's armies. They'd heard that story. They knew that truth. They heard how he had sustained them for 40 years through the wilderness with the manna, the bread from heaven. They knew, they'd heard the story of how two other armies on the other side of the Jordan River had tried to stop the Israelites from approaching Canaan, and they had mowed right over those opposing armies with the help of God. They knew that. Maybe they'd even heard the story of the false prophet who tried to curse Israel, and God turned that curse around on their enemies. They knew that. And what did they choose to do? They shut their gates tightly. The people of Jericho heard the truth about God, but they chose to reject him, and that rejection sealed their fate. And it was a terrible fate, as we're going to get into next week. Now, imagine you're a drowning man. The lifeguard swims out to you, and he's got that buoy, and he pushes it out to you to save your life. And you, in your panic, start pushing that buoy away. Is it the lifeguard's fault when you drown? All of humanity faces a dark fate without God's intervention. Thankfully, God has offered us a life preserver in the form of his son Jesus. As we're told in Romans 5, verses 8 and 9, "But God demonstrates his own love towards us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through him." God has offered us life, and we have a choice. We can open up our lives and embrace the help he's offered, or we can shut our lives tightly like the people of Jericho did. And if we reject God's provision, what hope remains for us? So don't shut up your heart tightly against Jesus. Don't miss out on this amazing gift that God has offered us through him. God offers this gift to anyone who will acknowledge their need, humble themselves in faith, and invite Jesus into their lives. What a tragedy to be offered the keys to eternal life, only to miss out because we were too stubborn or too scared to say yes to Jesus.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautics.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net.